Technology is everywhere a farmer looks. In many ways, it makes the job more efficient. In some ways, it makes the job more frustrating. But the goal is to know more so you can make better decisions, so you can be better at your job, so you and us non-farmers can be confident in our future supply of food. We're talking high tech on today's AgriTalk.
Live from a morning so dewy it's got decimals via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Teo Leino from IBM Research in Zurich. Then it's Mark Johnson, CEO of GrainBridge. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
It's one for the record books, isn't it? It's so dewy.
It is so dewy.
It's one for the record books. Yes,
for the record books. Well played. Well played.
How are you, Davis?
Really good. Did it? It didn't rain, did it?
No.
I didn't think so.
No, yeah. That's right. Huh. What we are missing is that big bright spot in the sky that has been there for several days in a row. And today in northern Iowa is just kind of blah, a blah day. Yeah.
Here we call that big yellow spot the joy ball.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah, that's what we call it. Yep. It's not a scientific term per se, you know.
Right.
But I feel like joy ball is an apt description.
Right. You know? Okay. Speaking of scientific terms, Teo from IBM Research is a theoretical chemist. Okay.
Theoretical chemist.
Yeah, okay. I mean, this guy works in the possibilities and probabilities of everyday life.
Okay. Now, did we clarify that? Because, you know, I could say, well, theoretically, I'm a chemist.
Right? No.
You know, in theory, I'm a chemist. Or is he a chemist who works in the theoretical realm? Is that what you're saying?
Yes,
did
exactly.
Did we clarify that?
The guy knows chemistry. He absolutely knows chemistry. What he's doing is he's putting that chemistry to work in his imagination.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like quite the combination.
We are not convinced yet that he's actually going to make contact with us because he is calling from Zurich. But we are going to be trying to have the conversation with Teo coming up in the next segment. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to be talking fertilizer.
Absolutely.
The guy is spending time thinking about how maybe, possibly, potentially, we could make fertilizer in the future.
I love it.
It's so cool.
I love it.
I can't wait to have the conversation. Yeah. All right, man, let's get to it before we get to Greg.
Well, Chip, some World Trade Organization nations are sounding the alarm over U.S. government payments made to farmers. Former USDA chief economist Joe Glauber warned that the billions of dollars paid to U.S. farmers in two trade mitigation programs and COVID-19 aid would get WTO members' attention. In fact, it has. Canada, the EU, India, Australia, Brazil, Paraguay, New Zealand, Uruguay, and Colombia have noted international market distortions. They want the U.S. to explain the around $34 billion in what they consider trade-distorting payments in 2019. Even before CFAP2's announcement, USDA projected total payments to farmers in 2020 would be $37.2 billion. Washington officials defended their actions, saying the additional farm payments are designed to minimize market impacts and are meant to mitigate the economic fallout from the coronavirus. They're going back to 2019 to the MFP, aren't they, on this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They're going back to the MFP payments. This is it's more about MFP than it is CFAP, I'm sure. We've talked about this countless times, that at some point the WTO would be involved in those MFP payments.
Mm-hmm. Well, EPA's move to reject 54 so-called gap year small refinery exemption petitions is a welcome development, but the Renewable Fuels Association and its ag and biofuel group allies say the Trump administration must follow through on other commitments to the sector, stressing those moves will be closely watched by stakeholders as the elections loom. RFA President and CEO Jeff Cooper said, quote, "I want to underscore just how big of a deal that really is," calling the rejections, quote, "a big step forward on the path to restoring integrity to the renewable fuel standard." And Chip, do I have this right? There are 14 yet that were sort of in process that Cooper is hoping will be dead on arrival once they come back from that process?
Yeah, I think they will be. I think they will be, because if you're rejecting the first 54, it shouldn't be that difficult to reject the next 14. Evidently there were some promises made to Iowa senators by the White House about a year ago, and everybody wants to know what those promises are or were, and whether or not the administration is living up to those promises.
USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue says he is hopeful that China can meet its purchase commitments of U.S. farm products via the Phase 1 trade deal by February, even though the accord is on a calendar year basis. While there are hefty export sales on the books, Perdue says he wants to see shipments, saying China is known for booking and then later canceling sales. And finally, add France to the growing list of countries tightening restrictions to curb the spread of coronavirus. And this from Prime Minister Justin Trudeau warns Canadians the second wave has arrived, saying it's all too likely we won't be gathering for Thanksgiving on October 12, but we still have a shot at Christmas. Still have a shot at Christmas in Canada? Chip?
Oh, good grief.
Now back to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Well, let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. How you doing, Greg?
I'm good, Chip. Some good news about the cattle markets. And basically, what we're getting sold, specifically, I've been listening to the Certified Angus Beef Annual Convention virtually. Chip, do you know that 70% of all steers and heifers slaughtered in the United States go to slaughter with a black hide?
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing statistic?
It really is. It really is an amazing statistic. But how many of them get branded? You know, CAB.
Well, with that, the quality is going up. And so the brand, they've identified about 15 million Angus cattle with Angus type. And of those, about 35% get meet all 10 requirements for CAB. Really, improvements in quality. It's been about, over the last 15 years, that's increased, basically doubled over the last 15 years.
Okay.
Also, what we're seeing is CAB has sold 1.1 billion pounds, and that's roughly 0.5% of all the beef sold in the United States. And we're predicting another 2-3% growth in our export sales through the decade. Good news is Randy Block was on there. He said, looks like cattle cycle prices have bottomed, and we should see more profitability for cow-calf producers in 2021.
Excellent.
Good news, demand's pretty good, pretty solid. Quality still sells.
Absolutely, it does. Thank you, Greg. We'll talk to you later. That's Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. We're going to be talking with IBM Research next on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Performance Beef, easy-to-use cattle management software. Join AgriTalk next week for Dairy Week, paying tribute to America's dairy farmers and celebrating the dairy industry. Dairy Week is presented by Elanco Animal Health with additional support from Aspen Veterinary Resources and Cargill Animal Nutrition. Register free at dairyherd.com/dairyweek.
I'm having trouble getting this chair loaded. Got a problem with my arm here.
Yes? What? Sorry. Go ahead.
So Davis.
Yes.
Big Apple Joe Stackler has been working very hard at putting together the schedule for next week's Dairy Week on AgriTalk, and it looks fantastic.
Yes, it's fantastic. Moving right along, you might
yes,
say.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Sorry.
Exactly. All right. Wow, I'm looking forward to this. Teo Leono, I think I've got that right, Leono, I'm going to go with, is a theoretical chemist for IBM Research. He joins us right now from Zurich. He is also the manager of the Accelerated Discovery Project at IBM Research. Dr. Teo, thank you so much for making time for us this morning. How are you?
Hello, good morning. Pretty well, thanks. And thank you so much for having me with you today morning.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, so let's start with Accelerated Discovery, Dr. Teo. What is it? How does it work? Why make it happen, the Accelerated Discovery?
So, yes, simply said, Accelerated Discovery is the way to supercharge how we are making discoveries in science today. So, using the knowledge that people have been accumulating across many years, and then combining that knowledge with the traditional scientific method in order to have materials on the market in a shorter time than the time that we are experiencing today. So this is the basic essence of the Accelerated Discovery.
Excellent. Okay, so IBM does an annual 5 in 5 predictions. It's a look at how technology might be used to address some of the, I think I would consider them threats that we face in the years ahead. It's about how technology might reinvent materials that we use every day. So simply put, Dr. Teo, it's science and discovery, correct?
That's correct. Actually, yeah. The 5 in 5 for us, it's a very nice way, it's a great way to convey how breakthrough in science can positively impact and change some of the aspects of our life. So this year, for instance, the 5 in 5 is focusing on a theme which is important to the entire humanity: how to supercharge the discovery of material that will enable a sustainable future for the entire people. We were addressing 5 topics this year. So the one was related to the materials that can help to reduce the CO2 in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. The second one is development of material for producing fertilizers in a more sustainable way. And then we move along the remaining 3 predictions, actually 3 bets. And one is about material for sustainable energy. We are talking about materials for battery. Better manufacturing, like semiconductors. And the last one is, of course, more sustainable and more faster drug developments.
Gotcha. Okay, it's a fascinating project to me. And I think the reason that it fascinates me so much is because it is about discovery. It is about figuring out new and different ways of doing things. And in the case of converting nitrogen into fertilizer, it's about replicating what Mother Nature can already do. Correct?
That's correct. I myself, I always keep telling these stories. I have been growing up with grandparents that were farmers. And I remember quite well that we're going through these cycles of never planting the same plants and the same vegetables in the same spot on the land, but always going through cycles. And the cycles were actually a mechanism that people have been developing across many centuries in order to make the soil more fertile. And so there are microorganisms that actually are taking the nitrogen in the atmosphere and creating fertilizer for the plants. Yeah. And these entire processes are the ones that are actually very sustainable and are the one that we are trying to mimic, be inspired in order to produce fertilizers in with less energy than the one that we are consuming today. And if I can only say something, the science, the 5 in 5 is beautiful because it's impacting everybody of us. So everybody of us, I mean, if we are reaching the 10 billion population in the world, is also because we have fertilizer that can sustain and increase the productivity of the soil. And these things will have to be conceived in such a way that are less impactful and will allow the entire humanity to actually go in a brighter future. So it's science, but it's about each of us on this planet.
Right, right. Now, some plants can fix their own nitrate. Is that right? And I'm thinking about soybeans that can mm-hmm. fix nitrogen out of the soil. Is the goal to duplicate that process on grasses and other plants like that?
So actually what happens is that there are a certain number of plants, including soybeans, regular beans, that are acting like optimal host for specific bacteria that can take the nitrogen from the atmosphere and convert it into nitrates. And then the plant is actually using the nitrates. There is a fantastic synergy between these bacteria and the plants. And this is really at the source of these cultivation cycles that I was mentioning before.
Yep.
So what we are trying to do is that if you think how we are making fertilizers today, we are actually taking the nitrogen from the atmosphere and we are consuming approximately 1 ton of fossil fuel in order to convert that nitrogen into nitrates that then can be used as a fertilizer. So what we are trying to do is to get inspired by the same mechanism that the bacteria are using to convert the nitrogen to nitrates, and instead of consuming 1,000 tons of fossil fuel, consume half of the corresponding energy, but renewable energy, energy coming from sun, wind, or hydro plants.
Yes.
So the basic of the project is really producing fertilizers with mechanisms that are inspired, but not duplicating, still chemical in nature, inspired by the bacteria that
Excellent.
Consume less energy.
Excellent. Excellent.
Chip, okay. Can I jump in here?
Yes.
Doctor, if I may just clarify. So what you're working on is basically rather than putting some sort of synthetic nitrogen onto plants and giving them the nitrogen that way, is empowering the plants to fix their own nitrogen. Am I hearing that right?
That's a possible approach. One mm-hmm. can, of course, develop optimal bacteria that can do that process in an optimal way.
Yeah.
But in reality, mm-hmm. the project itself is let's keep the production of the fertilizers in industrial plants, but let's use processes that are more economic, more environmental, affordable and less impactful.
Interesting. Okay, so when we talk about the amount of fossil fuel that is consumed around the globe on an annual basis to produce fertilizer, how much, I got to believe that it's a measurable percent, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. For producing fertilizers, at the moment we are consuming between 2-3% of the total energy production on the planet. These are huge numbers. I mean, it's if you think, I mean, how much energy the humanity is needing, and thinking that 3% of that is actually going into the production of a material that we use for increasing the productivity of the soil, we can do better. We can do better specifically because that 3% of the energy is coming from fossil energy rather than renewable energies.
This has been a fascinating conversation, and I love the whole concept of the IBM 5 and 5 project and the natural conversion of nitrogen into nitrates. It's a game changer. That's what we're talking about in the future of fertilizer. It is a game changer for the entire world, Dr. Teo. I really appreciate you making time for us this morning and talking about it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You bet.
Morning.
All right. That is Dr. Teo Leino, who is with IBM Research. Fascinating. Fascinating. All right. We've got Mark Johnson coming up next. He is the CEO of Grainbridge.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on kind of a gloomy day in Northern Iowa and kind of a gloomy day in the grain markets too, man. What is going on?
Well, the weekly export sales for corn and soybeans were phenomenal, much stronger than what was anticipated, but the market's kind of gotten used to that. And what we didn't get was daily export sales today, neither for corn nor soybeans. And the market is not used to that. And so we're under some price pressure. Keep in mind that the funds are heavily loaded on the long side of both those markets, especially soybeans, and they're taking some profits out of the long side this morning. We're sitting at pretty critical technical levels. December corn futures right on top of that old July double top at 363. So watch that one, whether it holds into the close. And then November soybeans are now trading below $10 and just above the uptrend drawn off the mid and late August lows. So pretty critical in terms of whether or not that support holds in both those markets and where we finish today.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'll admit when I went to the FAS page this morning and did not see an export sales update on there, I thought maybe the page was broken.
Reload a couple times.
I did. All right, what's happening in livestock?
Well, cattle market showing a little bit of price strength, but not a whole lot. We did see firmer cash trade early on so far this week, but we've got the futures trading out in front of the cash, so it's given us limited support. Hog market, we're seeing increasing price pressure as we've moved through the morning here. So now trading moderately to sharply lower in many of the contracts there.
Yeah, 85 to $1.10 lower in lean hog futures right now. All right, Brian, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. I enjoyed that conversation with Dr. Teo Leino, I believe it is. Leino.
Yes.
From IBM Research. And we're talking about technology today. And the technology that he is talking about, that he is envisioning, hasn't even been invented yet. But he knows he is looking at a natural happening and trying to figure out how to replicate that in a scalable environment to provide fertilizer in a much more efficient way for the entire world. I mean, dude, when it starts to happen this way. How cool will it be to be able to look back at the conversation that we just had with the guy that came up with the idea?
Right. Yeah. So this, I mean, you know, the word game changer is thrown around an awful lot these days. But seriously, if we could change the way that fertilizer is produced, applied, taken up by the crops.
Yep.
Wow. I mean, these are the sorts of things that literally and, you know, without hyperbole, that reshape humanity.
Yes.
They really are.
That is absolutely 100% correct. Fascinating stuff. Okay, let's move on. We got Mark Johnson, the CEO of Grainbridge, another guy that's putting technology to use on the farm. How are you this morning, Mark? Thanks for making time, man.
I'm doing great. It's an honor to be on the show. I listen to you every day on the way home from work. So
no kidding. Cool.
I do.
Cool. That's very good. Well, you'll be able to listen to yourself on the way home then. That's fantastic. So Grainbridge, Mark, inform me. Tell me what it is.
Sure. So Greenbridge has built an application where a farmer can see all of their transactional documents from both ADM and Cargill in a single system. So shows you all of your contract settlements, scale tickets, and the goal is to help farmers make better grain marketing decisions.
Okay. So that being able to see those contracts is one thing. Turn that ability into, use it in the decision-making process for us. Explain how that's going to help us make better decisions down the road.
Yeah, so Greenbridge historically, so we're a little over 10 years old, mm-hmm. and we built a piece of software that's largely used by grain marketing consultants to help farmers make their decisions. And one of the things we found is that farmers don't like to enter in data. Right, that what we really want is a system that kind of aggregates data, from things that you've already done. So, mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is bring together kind of a complete view of the farmer's grain position. So, ultimately, what we want to do is right now we've got a large chunk of contracts. Right, ADM and Cargill are very large grain buyers. Want to bring in contracts from other grain buyers so you understand how much of your grain has been contracted. Vendors understand what's in the bins, what's growing in the field, and then we really have a platform to give you really good decision support, to really understand risk management and give this sort of next-generation tool for farmers.
Okay, so that's the supply side of things. What other kind of information is fed into the platform to help generate those decisions?
Yeah, right. I mean, right now we're really focused on this transactional data side. So,
okay.
What's cool is you can come into the application and you can sign in with your ADM account, with your Cargill account, and we'll populate years of data into your account. And then as new transactional documents come in, scale ticket, for example, we can notify you of that. And the idea here is that, we want to make sure that you never miss a delivery again. You know what contracts need to be priced. So because we have all of this data aggregated in a single location, we can give you some really cool dashboards to show you what you have contracted, and also notifications and whatnot so that you never miss those events again.
Gotcha. So tell me about Greenbridge Advisor.
Yeah, so this is a tool that we've had for over a decade now, and it allows farmers, again, to sort of make better, more profitable grain marketing decisions, brings a lot of data, kind of a very advanced spreadsheet that allows you to understand, kind of what's going on your farm so you can make those decisions. So a lot of what we're doing with the new version of Greenbridge is to try to bring in capabilities from that, but bring it into this digital era, this highly connected mm-hmm. era where you have lots of applications, lots of data out there, bringing it into a single location to make it much, much easier, bringing it into the mobile era so that, you can do all of this from your phone. So that's really what we're trying to accomplish with this product release is kind of move that software that we built in the past and bring it into this new era.
Okay. Beyond marketing decisions, is it possible to load like your insurance coverage into Greenbridge?
So not today, but that's where we want to go. How do you become this? Yeah, how do you become this centralized hub where all of your information is in one place? I think one of the things. So I came here about 6 months ago. One of the things that really attracted me and I thought was really interesting is that because we're sitting on all of this data right now from ADM and Cargill, as we get more grain buyers on board, as we're able to populate more and more data into the system, we're going to be able to do some really advanced things in terms of giving farmers really smart suggestions based on all this data that's coming into the system. Of course, data privacy is really important to us, and we built the system from the ground up to ensure that. I mean, we're a JV between ADM and Cargill, and we've been very, very careful to architect the system from the ground up to protect data on all sides. So from the grain buyer side, from the farmer side. That being said, There's higher level insights potentially that we can start looking at and using this data in a really modern way, applying artificial intelligence to the underlying data, to give farmers sort of these next generation capabilities.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I mean, this is something that, I don't want to oversimplify it, Mark, but it's like that. It's like the pop-up on my email on Outlook to remind me that I've got to do something on this day at this time. It feels like that's what we're talking about with GrainBridge.
100%, right? And you want to make those notifications more and more intelligent, right? And over time, because we have a view into your farming operation, as we bring in data from the outside that affects your farming operation, like insurance, and then as we actually have a view of sort of the general population, you can imagine those notifications getting smarter and smarter over time and becoming more and more intelligent.
Yeah, it's going to learn from your actions, from your activity, and push it forward. So I'm a guy with 1,000 acres of corn, Mark. How exactly am I going to use this?
I think right now, if you sell to ADM, Cargill, or Bolt, you should absolutely sign up for the application. So we have some public-facing site where you can come and see bids. We have information about all the elevators and grain buying locations, wait times at many of them. And then when you sign up, we populate your account. And what's great about this, you can run reports on it. You can see dashboards. So if you sell to either ADM Cargill or especially both, you'll definitely want to sign up.
Interesting. All right, man. I tell you, this the use of technology in farming and in management techniques like this, Mark, it's come so far in the last 10 years, and it's hard to imagine where we're going to be in the next 10 years, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, from me coming into this role, there's a lot of siloed information out there. As you said, there's been a lot of advancements in farm technology and agricultural technology, but a lot of that information is siloed. And I think one of the things that we want to do at GrainBridge, and I mean, it's even in our name, right, is like, how do we bridge that gap? How do we take that information that's sitting in different applications, put it in a single location, and start to give you the kinds of dashboards that allow you to understand where you're at, that start to give you intelligent suggestions on top of that? So, for me, like my history is largely in artificial intelligence and information and organizing it. There's just a massive opportunity in farm technology to take all of the hard work that's been done over the past decade, and by the end of the next decade, have these super intelligent applications that help the farmer in every single one of the decisions that they make.
Very cool. Well, the new platform just launched, right?
Yes, it did. So www.grainbridge.com, come and sign up. And also another thing that I want to emphasize is we're looking for feedback here. This is really the first step that we're taking in giving you a better view of your grain position and allowing you to make smarter grain marketing decisions. So, sign up and give us feedback because we really want to hear it.
Excellent. Good stuff, Mark. Thank you so much, man. We appreciate you making time for us.
Thank you so much, Chip.
You bet. That is Mark Johnson, CEO of GrainBridge. Okay, when we come back on this technology-heavy day here on AgriTalk, Davis and I are going to wrap it up. We're going to take a look at a couple of things, including what's going on in these markets and the lack, like Brian Grady was talking about, the lack of a daily export sales announcement and the impact that it's having on today's grain trade. We'll do that next right here on AgriTalk.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize the Nature Conservancy for its efforts to help farmers build healthier soils and a more resilient agriculture system. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Eventful day. An eventful
yes.
day, absolutely.
Very exciting stuff. Groundbreaking.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So let's do a little conversation on beacons of hope, shall we?
Well, okay. Yeah. I don't watch TV. Okay.
At all.
But on occasion,
watch the Cubs play.
The what?
The Cubs.
If I want to watch Bears play, I just look out the back window. I got them in the backyard here.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
You know, and it, just a public service announcement. You don't want to get between the mother bear and the cubs ever, yeah. ever.
No.
I was going to bring them some honey, you know, because I was reading some Pooh Bear. And I thought, well, you know, it's nature. We'll bring them some honey. No, that did not turn out well at all.
No.
Anytime that I do happen to come across television broadcasts, it seems like there's an awful lot of people shouting, burning things, a lot of riotous type stuff, shootings, you know, there's all kinds of that stuff going on. And maybe it's just the TVs that I come across that are showing that, but it seems like we ought to be able to offset that in some way, at least in our own little bubble here of agriculture and even down on the community level. Because if you just watch the news and just pay attention to that, what's on TV, you would think that, gosh, the end is near, you know?
It'd be a struggle, wouldn't it?
Yes. What good is there left in this world? For crying That's out right. loud, you can't even go to Portland anymore and get an old school haircut, for Pete's sake.
That's right.
I'm here to That's offer right. you a way to put forward some of those, what we're calling beacons of hope.
Okay.
Let's offset some of the negativity that's out there in this world by encouraging people who have done a little bit extra for themselves, for their neighbors, who have shown resiliency, who rather than getting upset and freaking out and lighting things on fire and demanding that their needs be met, meet my needs for crying out loud, rather than taking that path, there are those who have taken the high road and reached out to help their neighbors. All right. You've heard me talk about it before. I'm going to bring it up again. Agriculture Future of America, the 2020 AFA Leaders Conference, November 14. They want to recognize those people, those beacons of hope, those examples of resiliency, of the giving spirit, that neighborly spirit that is so prevalent in agriculture and oftentimes goes so unnoticed. They're accepting nominations for Beacons of Hope until September 30, and that's coming right up. That's why I mention it. At agfuture.org/hope, agfuture.org/hope. We want to see people who are part of the solution. Part of the solution. Beacons of Hope. agfuture.org/hope. Get your nominations in Excellent. Right away and, you know, offset
right.
some of the insanity that's on your TV.
Yeah. I know one of your favorite writers for Farm Journal. Well, not just for Farm Journal, but one of your favorite writers is Chris Bennett, right?
Oh, absolutely. You bet.
I just got a text from him, and it's got a news report on there of a woman being arrested for not wearing a mask.
Oh, geez. See?
He's got a little commentary in the text that asks if this is for real, and I'm afraid that it is. I'm afraid that it is.
Yeah.
So that's some of the yelling and the shouting and the screaming that is happening out there that we are looking to offset. Okay. Mm-hmm. Export sales report out this morning. I want to talk about this real quick. Corn total export sales, 2.139 million metric tons. That's about 300,000 metric tons above the top end of the trade guess.
All right.
China is in there. 566,400 metric tons of corn sales to China for delivery in the 2020-21 marketing year in the week ended September 17th. Unknown destinations is next on the list. Japan is right there, 345,000 metric tons. Mexico is on the list. That's a positive sign, 282,000 metric tons. And then Colombia. Colombia has turned into a fantastic, after we got the Colombia Free Trade Agreement, Colombia has turned into a fantastic buyer of U.S. corn, and they are on the list as well. So really good numbers there. on the soybean side of things, the top end I thought was a little aggressive on the trade guesses, up to 3 million metric tons, and we pushed up through it. 3.194 million metric tons.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a big number. China is right at the top of the list, 1.879 million metric tons. 198,000 metric tons switched from unknown destinations.
Okay. Oh, all right.
So that total includes 200,000 metric tons that were switched from unknown destinations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've also got on the list Thailand, Indonesia. Indonesia at 101,000 metric tons, including 68,000 switched from unknown destinations. Mexico at 68,400, including some switches. So the reason that I'm making a big deal about that, including some switches, is what we've been talking about in the afternoon show, Davis. You can't just assume that a sale to unknown destinations mm-hmm. is to China. We can't make that assumption anymore. And I think that's a very important reminder out there right now to everybody that just assumes that the unknown destination sales are going of corn and of soybeans are going to China and China only. That's not the case. There's lots of demand from lots of places out there. Pork sales, real quick, 38,100 metric tons. So another good week of pork sales out there as well. So, yeah.
I love that. That's very exciting.
You do love that. Yeah. All right. Hey, thanks for listening this morning. You got to come back this afternoon. We've got Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities is going to be our guest analyst. And tomorrow morning, man, oh, man, should be an interesting conversation. It's the free-for-all. Wiesmeyer, Johnson, and Haney right here on AgriTalk.